Blog Talk Radio.
Mode One.
I want to rock with you.
You are now listening to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
The following internet radio show is for mature audiences only. That means, boys and girls, you must be 18 years of age or older to listen.
Would you say that First Lady of the United States, Michelle Obama, is an African-American woman who seems to have it all? After all, Mrs. Obama is intelligent, highly educated, attractive, has two beautiful daughters, and just happens to be married to the first black president in the history of the United States. Surely we understand that very few women, let alone black women, will be able to become the First Lady of the United States. But the more important question is, does First Lady Michelle Obama inspire educated, professional black women to be the best that they can be? Can today's black woman be a hard-nosed professional in the office, but yet come home and be a nurturing mother and or a romantic, sexy wife? My guest for the evening has a book coming out soon that suggests that even though black women may still be dealing with the challenge of overcoming their fair share of individual and collective episodes of adversity, they have surely conquered a high degree of misconceptions, misinterpretations, and highly invalid stereotypes to transition into a new era of achievement and personal fulfillment. My guest performed extensive research and solicited knowledge and wisdom from a bevy of heavy hitters in the African-American community. Who is this very intelligent, perceptive, and accomplished woman who seeks to have many of her fellow sisters redefine themselves and not allow themselves to become frustrated by many societal and media-generated representations of themselves that are not truly in line with who they really are and what they really have to offer? Her name is Miss Sophia A. Nelson, and tonight this bright and savvy political strategist, columnist, and commentator is going to discuss some of the contents of her upcoming book, Black Woman Redefined, Dispelling Myths and Discovering Fulfillment in the Age of Michelle Obama, as the lovely Miss Nelson Esquire is about to get up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry.
Oh my God, oh my God, is this A. Alan Roger Curry of Mode One fame? Oh my God,
you're really good at this.
I gotta ask you though, do you feel that black men have some type of unwritten obligation to date and marry someone in the race? You do?
I think they do. I think white people should date white people. I think black people should date black people.
Now, how did you come up with this idea to go to Italy with the women?
With the women, right. I just got so tired of hearing all my male friends talk about Brazil and how great Brazil is for them.
When I was growing up, I would go and hear about black women complaining about white women are stealing our men. Don't complain about your goods being stolen if you casually leave them on the front porch.
Have sex. Enjoy your life.
You know, men really want women to have standards. They really do. And I don't know how we got off of the mark there, but men do like classy women, and they want women to have standards.
I think you can be single and be very, very happy, and I think it's about taking the pressures off about being married.
I'm not saying that you should disrespect a woman. Never disrespect your woman. But the key is to not let her walk all over you.
Romantic love is very volatile. People don't realize it. And it is a drug. People don't realize it. Men and women do stupid things. Not all men, but sometimes you'll do something stupid.
I think it's a turn-on because just to see that person, just to enjoy themselves and just to watch them touching that person and making them feel good, I think that's kind of sexy, actually.
Yo, yo, Mode One, this is Gerard McClendon from Chicago tonight and the McClendon Report. Right now you're listening to Upfront and Straightforward with my good friend, Alan Roger Curry. Mode tell us what you're really thinking. Ha ha! Allen Roger Curry.
Gentlemen, to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Allen Roger Curry. We're on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and I'm your host, Allen Roger Curry. And today is Thursday, April 21st, and I'm still going to whine and complain because it's still a wee bit too chilly here in the Midwest for this to be springtime on the calendar. I don't like it. I want some high 50s, 60, even 70-degree weather, but we still up in the 30s and whatnot in the Chicagoland region. I don't like that, but hey, it could be worse. It could be snow and ice. But I have another interesting topic of discussion for you this evening, and yet another great guest. Tonight I will be interviewing a woman who is very intelligent, articulate, very socially aware, young lady who has a book coming out toward the end of next month. And in this book, she examines the role of black women today in society, in relationships, in corporate America, and even in the church. And I think this discussion should be both enlightening and very interesting for all of those listening this evening and those who may listen to this episode as an archive podcast. Before I get to the conversation with my guest for the evening, though, first, next week, my main man, David X, will be back on the show. Next week, David X will be back on the show. David X, if you're not familiar with David X, say this your first time listening. Of all my episodes over the last 3.5-4 years, three of my interviews with David X are in my top 5 most listened to episodes of all my episodes. Yeah, he has the number 1 spot, the number 2 spot, and the number 5 spot. Matter of fact, he's the only guest who's been on my show 4 times, and this will be his 5th time on my show. And he will be joining me next week along with Sasha, who this will be his 3rd time on my show. We all did a conference in London, England last November called the Direct Approach Dating Summit for Men. Really nice conference. I was one of the featured speakers. David X was one of the featured speakers. And the DVD for that event is about to come out, I think the middle to end of May. And we're going to be talking about, kind of reminiscing on the conference and talking about the upcoming DVD. So that should be an interesting episode next week. Then I have 3 guests lined up in the month of May that I think all will be bringing their own brand of knowledge, wisdom, expertise. A young lady named Sherry Winston will be up first in May. She is with an organization called the Intimate Arts and Holistic Sexuality Center, and that's what she will be talking about, what she calls holistic sexuality. Sherry Winston. Then the following week, May 12th, I will have a woman who I just read I don't know if it was an article or a blog entry, got a lot of attention. She talked about how men are demonized for being upfront and straightforward with their sexual interests. Now, you know I can relate to that. That's what Mode 1 is all about. Hence the title of my show, Upfront and Straightforward. And she wrote this very on-point article about how society, you know, makes men look like the bad guys if they're upfront and straightforwardly honest. You know, the guys who are full of crap end up viewed as the gentleman, whereas the guys who are more provocatively straightforward many times are looked at as, you know, being socially inappropriate. Anyway, we're going to talk about that. That's on May 12th. Then finally, on May 19th, I have a woman, dating and relationship expert by the name of Lucia. Lucia will be talking about why nice guys finish last in the dating and relationships arena. Why nice guys finish last in the dating and relationships arena. So those are some of my guests coming up. You know, I got all love for my listeners. I got love for all my listeners, but particularly my chat room listeners. And I got a few of them that are joining me this evening. I got my number one ace listener, Adrian, a.k.a. Diva, 362636. She is in my chat room. As you know, she's not only my most loyal listener in the chat room, but she knows more about sports than probably any woman I've ever met in my life. Got my buddy Jason 6ix9ine Barnes, Los Angeles actor and up-and-coming filmmaker. He is in my chat room, Jason 6ix9ine Barnes, who had a show himself on the Blog Talk Radio Network, but he's been on kind of an indefinite hiatus, sabbatical, whatever you want to call it. I got Victoria WK in my chat room. Miss Bra Vederick is in my chat room. I got a number of guests in my chat room. Welcome, welcome. I hope you enjoyed tonight's conversation. More shout-outs would be my brother and ace confidant, Stephen Curry. Stephen Curry, my young cousin, J.P. Jones in Chicago, at the bar in Maplewood, New Jersey, Christopher Curry in Detroit, Michigan, Philip Poyum and his older brother, Irvin D. Poyum, the third, EVP3, No Head, a.k.a. Metal Hayes, Vanessa Turner, Edie Lee Harris, Don Calypso, who was just in my chat room, and a number of my other Blog Talk Radio hosts and colleagues, Facebook friends, all my Mode 1 supporters. That's right, the Bulls only need one more victory. One more victory. That's what I'm talking about. Now, I feel weird because, you know, everybody knows I was born and raised in Gary, Indiana. So you would think I'd be for the Indiana Pacers, but if anybody knows their geography, they know that Gary has always been right next door to Chicago. Most people consider Gary, Indiana, a suburb, southeast suburb of Chicago. So since I was a little kid, I've been a Bulls fan. Anyway, they're up 3-0 on the Indiana Pacers. And I tell you, some of the Pacers were playing. I didn't like the way they were playing, man. I did not like the way they were playing. They were playing kind of rough. There were some hard fouls, borderline, unethical-type fouls. Some guy named Jeff Foster kept using his elbow. He elbowed Derrick Rose in the head, elbowed Leon Ding in his back of his head. Did not like that. I don't want the NBA to look into that. They cannot be messing with my boys. Those are my boys, the Bulls. Yeah, all of the games have been close, but, you know, I see Adrian in the chat room talking smack. Yeah, the game's been close. But, hey, Adrian, your Miami Heat are in a close game tonight, too. Thank you. With the Philadelphia 76ers. Some other games going on. San Antonio, Memphis. New Orleans has been playing Los Angeles very tough. Chris Paul is bringing it. Him and Kobe Bryant were getting a little testy yesterday. They were getting a little testy. A lot of physicality in their interactions on the court. Orlando is in a tough series with Atlanta. Boston is squeaked by two close games over the Knicks. This is, I still say, this is, to me, so far, the best NBA playoffs, like, ever. Like, ever. I mean, in terms of the amount of parity, you know, it's just been a lot of exciting players. I'm looking forward to the rest of the NBA playoffs. Now, first, speaking of the NBA, first it was Kobe Bryant, of course, with his inappropriate remark. He made a homophobic comment. Now it is Lady Gaga who had to apologize. You know, she's frequently been compared to Madonna, and I guess she's reached a point where she's kind of tired of being compared to Madonna. So she called the comparisons, excuse me for saying, retarded. And she caught a lot of heat for it, and so she had to apologize for it. And, you know, hey, I would be flattered to be compared. Madonna is an icon. I mean, Madonna is no one to be ashamed to be compared, but I understand she wants to be her own person. You know, we were just talking about the NBA. Nobody wants to be known as the next Michael Jordan. They want to be known as their own self. They want to gain their own reputation, identity, and I think that's the thing with Lady Gaga. But, hey, God bless her. Jerry Seinfeld and Donald Trump got beef going on. Jerry Seinfeld backed out of a function designed to help celebrate Donald Trump's son's birthday, but Seinfeld is not cool with the focus on the whole birth certificate issue that Donald Trump is bringing up with President Obama, and he backed out, and Donald Trump had some harsh words for Seinfeld for backing up. I'm not going to repeat all of them. You can look it up on Google, but Yeah, he was pretty upset. And there's a woman who filed a lawsuit against Match.com because she was sexually assaulted. And the interesting thing is she's not suing for money. She's suing for a change in policy, which it looks like Match.com is going to accommodate her. They're going to now screen for their members to see if any of the men have a history of sexual battery, sexual assault, any type of sexual-related offenses. So I guess her lawsuit has done its job. But, I mean, these women have to realize, you know, we've done a number of episodes on this show about on the pros and cons of online dating. And, yeah, you got to have your own screening tactics with people. You know, if you don't know anything about people's background, particularly as a woman, you got to have your own screening tactics in place. That's why I actually like social networking sites like Facebook. At least with Facebook, you get to see these people interacting with their friends, some that they've known since elementary school. Now, even that can have its flaws, as most people know with one of my past situations. But Facebook, I don't know. I think social networking sites might have some advantages over the traditional online matchmaking services such as Match.com. But anyway, I thought that was interesting. And finally, Tracy Morgan. Are you familiar with the comedian Tracy Morgan? He was a regular on Saturday Night Live, and most recently he's been seen quite frequently on the hit comedy on NBC, 30 Rock. Evidently, he made some inappropriate comments about First Lady Michelle Obama and talked about how much, I guess, she turns him on. Now, I have a lot of friends who used to be comedians or even still are comedians, and a lot of what drives good humor is honesty. And you know I'm big on straightforward honesty, upfront straightforward honesty. But there's a fine line between comedy, honesty, and stupidity. And I think Tracy Morgan might have put at least one foot in the stupid zone because you just don't talk about First Lady Michelle Obama, you know, like she's some kind of Playboy centerfold model. You just don't do that. And but Tracy Morgan has always been a different kind of brother. I think anybody who knows about his work would have to acknowledge he's just a different type of brother. But speaking of Michelle Obama, when I get back from this brief intermission break, I'll be ready to introduce my guest, and we will be talking to the author of the upcoming book, Black Woman Redefined, Dispelling Myths and Discovering Fulfillment in the Age of Michelle Obama. That is coming up next, right after this brief intermission. Don't go anywhere.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
Mode 1.
You're about to enter into the erotic zone with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, the king of verbal seduction. This is the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Diana DeVoe, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Layla Odom, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Bella.
And this is Charlie.
And we're dancers from the legendary Score Strip Club in New York City. And you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Alexandra Cunahakis, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
So I'm getting treated for my sex disease.
This is Nikki True, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the king of verbal seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
This is Ambrosia Cumming, and you're listening to Alan Roger Curry, a.k.a. the King of Verbal Seduction, right here on the Erotic Conversationalist.
Ain't you a little wet behind the ears to be running your mouth for? You don't really want me to run in your house.
Episodes of the Erotic Conversationalist are available as a downloadable MP3 file from www.mode1.net. All right, I'm going to go with my next caller, area code 310. 310. You are now up front and straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. What's your question or comment?
I used to date lots of women, both in high school and in college and in medical school, and people used to always ask me, you're not the best-looking guy, you're not the richest guy out there, how are you getting all these women? And essentially, the answer is actually quite simple. It's essentially having the confidence and knowing what you want to do.
Oh, thank you, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, Master Allen.
Ooh, say that again.
Yes, sir, Master Allen.
I like that.
Hey, buddy, thank you so much for having me. That is easily the nicest introduction that I've ever had.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. My guest for the evening was born in Munich, Germany, and earned her BA in political science from San Diego State University and her law degree from American University in Washington, D.C. My guest went on to practice law in New Jersey and Washington, D.C., and was even admitted to practice law in front of the United States Supreme Court. That's right. She's thorough. My guest served as a special assistant in the administration of former New Jersey Republican Governor Christine Todd Whitman and soon found herself as the youngest and first black female in the state of New Jersey to receive a major political party's nomination for the U.S. Congress. My guest more recently has developed a career as a well-respected political and social commentator, working as a political columnist for Jet Magazine. And she is a regular contributor to MSNBC, CNN, Fox News, The Washington Post, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, The Root. Shall I go on? For the sake of time, I will not. But her resume is very extensive. And now you can add book author to my guest for the evening's resume and myriad of achievements and accomplishments with her new hardcover about to drop in bookstores in next month. And her book is entitled, as I mentioned already, Black Woman, Redefined, Dispelling Myths and Discovering Fulfillment in the Age of Michelle Obama. On behalf of the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network, and Upfront and Straightforward, listeners, give it up for Miss Sophia A. Nelson, Esquire. What is up, my feisty friend, Sophia?
I don't even know where to start with you. I've never seen anything like this in my entire life. I've been on Twitter talking about you. You ought to check it out. I told everybody you hadn't shut up yet, and I had been on hold for 20 minutes, but that's okay.
Oh, man. See, now my chat room going to eat that up.
Yeah,
see,
they
I have.
Really should like it. And I've got a cold, everybody, so forgive me if I sound a little chewed up. This is not my normal way of being, but we're still going to talk it up, so we're all good.
Now, I have to confess, since you threw that criticism out there, yes, I do have a certain percentage, and I would say a small percentage, but yes, I do have a certain percentage of supporters and listeners that have said to me, they say, Alan, I love your show, I love your guests, I love your topic, but honestly, if I have one criticism, your intros are too long. I want you to like get right to the guest like within the first 5 minutes. I don't know, maybe in the future I might change, but that's how I've been doing it for like 3 or 4 years. I usually, yeah, I have a 15, 20-minute kind of topical stuff. But anyway, we're now into the conversation, and now, but see, as my listeners know, a lot of my guests and I, we have a little chit-chat during some of the intermission breaks. And Miss Nelson here told me that she was getting riled up by some of the things I was talking about in my news and notes. Number one, Sophia, you mentioned Twitter. You are a one-tweeting sister. I mean, I don't know how many of my listeners are really into Twitter. I think more of my listeners are probably more Facebook than Twitter. But, yeah, there are some people on Twitter that are they just tweet their little hearts out. And yes, Sophia is definitely one of them. When did you first fall in love with the whole tweeter phenomenon?
We're getting an echo. Do you hear the echo? Are we okay?
On my end, I don't hear echo.
Okay.
Listeners, put in the chat room if you're hearing an echo during this conversation.
Work it out. I'm on a hard line, but at any rate, I really didn't like Twitter, to be honest. I'm a Facebook girl. But I know it's a necessary tool, and I've bought into the theory, Alan, that it's not the quantity, it's the quality of who you have following you and who you follow. So although there are some who aspire to have, you know, tens of thousands and hundreds of thousands and even million followers, like my good friend Cory Booker, that's not me. So I try to make my tweets meaningful. And, try to inspire folks, make them laugh, do good things like that. And I think Twitter allows you to be a little more creative because it forces you to have to condense what you want to say.
Okay. That was good feedback.
It's all good.
So far, my chat room listeners said they don't hear an echo. So,
that's good.
So far,
why'd you just tweet me and say you are cold?
I sure did. That's cold. You said, Alan.
Okay,
listen, she wasn't joking. She has a tweet. It says, Alan has not stopped talking yet.
I mean, I'm sick
of
the dog.
So as soon as he
shuts
up.
Yo, come on. Let's talk to
people. She got capital letters up. Shuts up. I will start speaking. Now, see, I'm going to put you on the spot, Sophia, since you talked about the quality of who follows you and who you follow. You know my feelings are hurt because I want to say, and you might correct me if I'm wrong, you're not following me, are you?
I sure am. Yeah, because anything to keep you quiet, I will do it. So I could follow you. So if you could stop lighting up my Twitter box, whatever, it's all good.
Ooh, now see, I like you already. Even though you're tripping me out, you done dog me. But I like guests who are up front and straightforward. Because as I tell all my guests, this is not the show to be all formal and be always on top of your P's and Q's. I like a relaxed conversation, an open, frank conversation. Now, you're an AKA as well.
Oh, boy, here we go.
No, I got love for the AKAs because my late mother was...
Oh, God bless her.
She was the basilisk of the Tall chapter in Indiana University.
How about that? God bless
and,
her. Her ivy be on the wall.
Yeah, and I got an aunt that's AKA. And
wonderful women.
Yeah.
But we love all the women. All the stars out there of other organizations are fabulous also. It's all good.
Yes, exactly. So, but I think I ended up telling you something through Twitter. You didn't know that Tavis Smiley was an old frat brother of mine. Now, what sparked your interest in transitioning from the field of law into media and writing and that sort of thing?
So we ain't talking about the book, are we?
Yeah, we're going to talk about the book. I'm going to get to it in a second.
Oh,
but I want to know, speaking of the book, though, I want
to
know what led
you
to, because it seemed like you were headed towards a career in either law or politics, and now you've tended to go towards, writing.
Well, on a serious note, to answer your question and for your listeners, it's actually a good question because I think it gives great insight into how I came to this place in my life's journey. And If you go to the book website, blackwomanredefined.com, there's what we call a sneak peek. And it's an invitation letter that I write to everyone, but in particular my sisters, who I hope will buy and read this book. And I talk to them about the journey of life and my journey and why it's so important that we be true to ourselves. We do those things which breathe life into us, which inspire us, which encourage us, which allow us to be authentically who we were meant to be. And I never, ever in my heart really wanted to be a lawyer, but I knew I was going to be one from the time I was about 5 years old. One of the things that black families do, and I'm not criticizing this, I understand it, you know, Jewish families do this, other families do this, is, you know, parents always want better for their children. They want children to be doctors and lawyers. You know, every family wants a doctor and a lawyer if they can get one. And, you know, so sometimes what ends up happening, I think, particularly for us as African Americans, as first generations to go to college or graduate school, you know, we're fulfilling the dreams of those who didn't have the opportunity to fulfill dreams. And sometimes what happens is our dreams get left behind or put aside, or we don't know what they are. I knew that I wanted to write always. It's funny, my cousin, one of my cousins who I grew up with, her oldest daughter is a senior in college, and she's, you know, wanting to pledge Alpha Kappa Alpha Sorority Incorporated, and I shouldn't say pledge, I'm sorry, go through the membership intake process. And she called me, and she was telling me how her mom was sharing with her that when we were like 7 or 8 years old, that evidently I stood up in front of all the cousins and said, me being the oldest cousin, that I was going to write a book someday. And they all thought it was great that, I mean, they weren't surprised that I did it or that I'm doing it, you know. And so it's always been something in my heart. I love to write. I've been blessed to write for the Washington Post since 1997 as a contributor in many outlets in this country. And then, of course, Jet has just been a real blessing. It's humbling to write for Jet. You know, that is a staple in our community. And to be a featured columnist and have my picture in there every week and have my own column and to have done cover stories on the president and the first lady, cover the White House, is just, you know, it's beyond my wildest dreams. So I'm very grateful to Jed and Linda and Candy and Myra and all the good people who, you know, have been there to support my career. So having said that, you know, I am doing what I was supposed to do in my life right now. And I made that change at 40 years of age, which isn't an easy thing to do when you're, you know, in a big firm making good money. And, you know, a lot of times people kind of quit at 40, and by that I mean they just decide, well, this is my life, this is what it is. And they resolve themselves to be content with what they have and kind of go through however they go through. I made a decision that that wasn't going to be what I was going to do. So I'm now doing what I want to do.
Hey. Do what you love, and the money will follow. So I hear you're. Are you a good cook, Sophia?
Very.
Very.
But why we talk about cooking? I don't know.
Because I want. I saw that you mentioned. You know, I've been paying attention to your tweets, and you were talking about you going to cook. I just want to quickly ask you, what's your favorite dish to cook?
Well, I grew up in South Jersey near Philly, so Italian food is my great love, and I grew up with a lot of Italian Americans and Irish Americans and what I call the ethnic, you know, just the fabulous ethnic conclave of every race and nationality. It's kind of like being in New York or Brooklyn and South Jersey and, you know, Philly, and Italian food would be my favorite food to cook. But I can cook anything, and for Easter I'm going to make a ham and do, you know, the traditional thing. I went grocery shopping today and, you know, bought all the usual goodies and things and try and make it a little healthy, though. Got a lean ham and, you know, some good veggies and, you know, of course we're going to have some whipped potatoes and some good stuff like that. But, you know, I'm gonna try to keep it somewhat good and healthy.
No chicken wings?
No chicken wings. Not for Easter Sunday, no. No.
You would have to know me and know my show. All my listeners know my perfect meal is chicken wings and peach napple. So I end up talking about that.
Chicken wings and peach napple. Okay, that's an interesting. I'm going to go out and try that sometime.
Yeah, I love me some chicken wings and peach napple. Now, I know a lot of people don't eat chicken wings on Easter, but You know, sometimes you have some people who just go against the grain. Now, no, I got another question before I go into your book. So
it's your show, my love, so you
yeah,
do
exactly.
What
that's right. You, I was talking about how, I don't know if you're familiar with my book, Mode 1, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking. But it's all about encouraging men to express their romantic and or sexual desires, interests, and intentions in an upfront, straightforwardly honest manner. And you kind of balked at the mention of upfront, straightforward communication. What's your contention with upfront, straightforward communication?
My word. Alan, all I could say is read the book. And we need to get past that. We are destroying ourselves as black men and black women with that kind of foolishness. And I'm just going to come back equally direct with you. There is more to life than your loins. There's more to life than what you need in bed and what you feel and what you need to have. Life is about having a life with somebody. It's about building a life. It's about sharing a life. And sex is certainly a part of that. It's an important part of it. But the problem in our culture now, and the reason we got all these fools running around, me included and others included, that ain't married by the time they're 40 years old, never been married, no kids, and kind of scratching their heads as to why. And I'm certainly not throwing myself in the group of folks who slept around and did stuff like that. That wasn't me. But what I'm saying is that everybody out here is so busy taking care of self and feeding self that they don't realize that's not a life and that's not building a life. And, you know, at some point you got to grow up. And at some point, being upfront, as you call it, or as people who want to make excuses for bad behavior call it, is, well, you know, I told you after I bedded you, did you know I wasn't feeling you after that. Like, we were just a friends with benefits thing. Well, you know what? If you get Glenn close in the bed with you, you got a problem, don't you? Because now you got fatal attraction, and she don't want to hear that it was just a hit it, quit it thing. She's not happy with you. And so, you know, you run a risk in this day and age in particular where people are breaking up with folks on text and sending folks emails and doing all kind of antics that, you know, you're looking at people who are lonely. And when you go to bed with somebody, and this is something men should know, and if they don't know this, buckle up, because let me tell you. Women, no matter what they tell you, now hear me on this, fellas. Now, if they're prostitutes, that's different, because now it's a business transaction. Okay, that's different. Take that off the table. But I'm talking about your average woman that you meet, and whether it's your friend or your colleague, whatever it is, and you've talked a little bit, you had dinner, and now you've decided to go to that next level. Do not deceive yourself into believing that that woman doesn't want more than just a one-night stand with you. She may say that, but be clear. I've listened to too many stories and seen too many of my friends broken and hurt and busted, wiped too many tears of women who engaged in, and we have the research in the book to back this up about how many women actually engaged in this, how many felt good about it, what they felt about it after they did it, and the emptiness that was there. So while it may be different for a man to experience this, I think that we have to get to a place of higher accountability in our culture. I can't speak to other cultures, but black men and black women have to get back to a place of mutual love and respect, where just because a man can have sex with you doesn't mean he should have sex with you. And just because he can tell you, well, I told you up front that we were going to have sex and that should be sufficient, that I'm done with you, that's a coward's game. And it's also not a very kind way to treat a fellow human being, just to be honest. It just isn't. So I think that we just need to be accountable for our behavior and understand that everything we do has consequences. I mean, if you want to live that way, fine, but then don't be surprised when some crazy chick rolls up on your door, cut your tires, you know, bust your windows out, does all the things that we hear about all the time happening. Don't be surprised when that's the result.
Well, I'm not okay. Now that I've listened to your take on it, of course I'm going to have to add my take and then we can move towards your book. But you, number one, you would have to read my book just as I need to read your book. My book is nothing close to being representative of foolishness, not in any way, shape, or form. There's nothing contained in my book that I encourage men to do that would be representative of foolishness or cowardice. some of your members of your fellow gender and even some of the members of your fellow sorority, starting with when I was in college, one of their complaints was men engaging in manipulative head games. And that's what my book really attacks, because any woman who's a seasoned veteran of the dating game and any man who's a seasoned veteran of the dating game knows that both genders play games with each other. One of the most common games that men play is the game of, I'm going to pretend like I'm falling for you. I'm going to pretend like I'm interested in a long-term monogamous relationship with you. But really, I just want to tap that ass. And what I basically do in my book is challenge those type of men, the men who would be tempted to play that type of game, among other manipulative head games, to just have the balls to be upfront and straightforward with their desires and intentions. That way, a intelligent woman, a mature woman, realizes that now she's been given the choice whether to indulge in short-term monogamous episodes of sex or not, because nobody holds a gun to a woman's head. We are all adults, and what I'm about is men giving women the choice to choose to interact with them casually or not, and not just as it relates to casual sex. My whole book is about just being upfront and straightforward with your desires, interests, and intentions, period. But yes, my book, Mole One, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking, is not fueling immature acts by men, foolish acts by men. I'm telling mainly men, but both men and women, that these destructive, manipulative head games have got to stop. That's what's really contributing to the animosity, not only between the genders in general, but particularly between black men and black women, is that there's just too many head games played by both genders. And I'm doing my part to discourage men from indulging in their brand of head games. So that's why I wrote my book, and that's why a lot of people love my book. Now, moving on to your book, it appears as though you've had some very well-respected and influential African-Americans contribute to this book. A few names would be Finesse Mitchell, who has actually been a guest on this very show, Soledad O'Brien, Roland Martin, Taraji Henson, Joseph
Sherry
C. Phillips, Shepherd, and a number
Corey
of them.
Girl, I could keep ticking them off for you. Yep.
Yeah,
a lot of people very humbled by that.
Now, and yeah, all
but,
of
but
them
they
well
contributed
respected.
In the back. It's not a, it's not an anthology or anything like that. You'll see when you see how it's set up. They're in there. I did something very unique with them. I basically asked them to give some words of sage wisdom if they could go back and talk to their 25-year-old selves, or if their 20-year-old selves, what would they tell young sisters who are starting out in life, or you know, what would they want them to know is the important thing in life, in their journey of life. And I think you're going to be really, everybody will be very moved by some of the folks. I mean, Mark Lamont Hill's essay will make you cry. I mean, I'm not just talking about me. I mean, I think it will move men, because he just opens up in a way we don't see brothers open up. And I think Jeff Johnson got real. And I think that, you know, Roland always comes real. But I made black men a big part of this book because, and white men and white women and others. I mean, there was national research done. This is not a self-published book, and I always think that's important to say. You know, it's going to be a big book. I mean, it's got research. It was 5 years in the making, 2 years almost of research alone, and then the writing. I mean, it was a big journey, and it was the passion of my heart, and I'm glad that it's finally coming to fruition and that we'll all be able to dialogue about it.
Now, there was two contributors I found that were noticeably absent, and that would be Steve Harvey and Hill Harper.
I asked both of them and was declined. So,
really?
Yeah. But they were absolutely on my list. I have great respect for both of them. And I guess I shouldn't say, it's probably not fair to say Hill declined. That probably wouldn't be an accurate statement. I talked with his person, Marvette Brito, I think is his agent, if you will, and she was fabulous and made a good effort, but he's a very busy man, and you know, I don't have any problem with him being too busy for this to, you know, fit into his schedule. I would have loved to have had something from him, however, because I've read his books and I particularly enjoyed the conversation. I mean, I don't agree with everything he said in there, but I respect the brother for trying to be positive and try to take it. And that's what I was saying in our last segment there, Alan, that I like that he'll try to raise it to another level of you know, what we ought to be doing as black folks and black men and black women. And I think that Steve Harvey, you know, having read his book as well, there were things I definitely didn't agree with. But, again, I respect him for writing it, and I think some of what he said had truth to it.
Yeah, I've read both of the books. Matter of fact, you know, Harper is, excuse me, he's actually was my first two-time guest on Up Front and Straightforward, and one of my interviews with him was about his book. You didn't have any, well, I guess you just explained, I was going to say, you didn't have any major philosophical disagreements.
Oh, no, no, I think, and I say this in my book, I mean, in one of the chapters on relationships, I tell sisters straight up, if you think that this book's going to be the answer to if I'm going to go off on black men or whatever, you got the wrong book. It's not that kind of book. I am trying to, as similar to Hill, I think, bring about much-needed healing, much-needed understanding of who black women are. I tell you, nobody in the world has a worse need of a PR agent than black women. Black women are defined completely by stereotypes that have really become reality in many ways. I mean, look, it's like anything else. If you tell a child long enough that they're stupid, right, or you tell them they're bad, they're going to live that out in reality. If you tell black women every day they're angry, they're mean, they're isolated, they're alone, they're hostile, they're not easy to get along with, they're not this, they're too much of that, sooner or later they'll start to live that out. You understand what I'm saying? So my goal here was to rip back the covers and to take folks on a walk inside. If they're seeing all these so-called things that they think they know about us, maybe they need to take a second look. And I wanted to peel back the layers of, okay, I don't disagree that many black women are angry. So if they are, why? Let's get to why. I don't disagree that many black women are relationally challenged. Okay, so what's the why on that? What's the deal with all the sisters going to church with the Bible in their hand and the hat on their head and praising Jesus and talk about Jesus as their man and they don't need a man? What's up with that? Is that a healthy thing? Is that in my Bible? I mean, you know, I'm trying to dissect through research that was done by two of the best pollsters in the country, Kellyanne Conway and Silas Lee at Xavier University, did the black male research, and having people like Audrey Chapman weigh in and some of the other best psychiatrists and psychologists and health and wellness people and relationship people who names we all know, but I took them on a different journey because I made them look at the black woman and I allowed them the space to be real with just exactly what's going on based on what we found in the data. And some of the data was very disturbing. It was very upsetting. I mean, one of the biggest findings that I think was troubling to me that I didn't see coming was that almost 50% of the sample of African-American professional college-educated women, and the sample was about it was 540, I believe, was the sample, which is a very good national sample of, you know, of a population as small as ours in the numbers. It's probably oversampled, if you will. But the rate of sexual abuse was extremely high. And we're talking with a highly educated, highly paid group of women. We're not talking about Precious here, okay? We're talking about the cream of the crop, almost 50% saying that at some point in their life they've been the victim of sexual abuse and rape, and at the hands of another black man. And so that being the case, what many brothers told us in focus groups that they had a hard time with wasn't that they didn't love black women, wasn't that they were intimidated by black women, if you will, but that they were dealing with black women by the time they got to these women and dated them, they were so scarred. Many had been so hurt by other black men. This is black men talking. I thought the brothers came incredibly correct and brave and honest and and said if there's damage done to sisters, we've done it to them. The question is, and then we've kind of cast them aside. These are men talking. This isn't the women. These are the men that said this. And I thought it was incredibly honest and candid and
you thought it was
healing.
Use those two words again.
What?
You thought they were
incredibly
honest and candid?
Yes.
Okay, just had to point that out. Uh-huh. Okay, did any other statistics or research findings really, like, raise your eyebrows?
Sure they did, but I can't tell you about them here on the... I can't do that. The book's not public yet. My publisher will kill me.
Okay.
I mean, you know, good, kudos for trying, though.
Now, speaking of some of the guests on my show, I had a relationship expert on here by the name of Steve Penner, and he started a singles group in Connecticut about 20 years ago called Lunch Dates. And what really riled up some of my black female listeners, but it wasn't from his opinion, but he said his group did surveys about with the men and women as far as what groups do you find the most desirable, and I guess what groups do you find the least desirable.
I know what you're going to say. We talked
about it. He made the comment that black women, you know, ended up, based on, again,
that's
the
true
surveys of his group. And so I was going to
ask. It's not
his
group, Alan.
Here's the thing he said that was key, and this is what I want to ask you about. He said none of these were really based on how the groups actually behaved, but they were more so on the perceptions and stereotypes that they, you know, gained through hearsay, media images, etc. So who do you feel, in your opinion, Sophia's opinion, is the media and or entertainment industry the major culprit? Is there one major culprit?
I think to pin it on one culprit is myopic and not would not be an accurate depiction of what we know is a 400-year history in the United States of America with regard to black people and how they've been portrayed and treated and handled. Now, I know that that's not a popular topic. I get it. I get that nobody likes to talk about our history. And I get that nobody likes to deal with the reality. And I think that Katrina exposed this so well. The underbelly of Katrina wasn't just the horrific images we saw of black people dying in the street and not getting food and water in the richest nation on earth, but we saw a poverty that few of us knew existed. I had never been to New Orleans before the Katrina happened. So I never saw the New Orleans that, you know, everybody raved about and talked about. The poverty was stunning to me. And I think it was stunning to a lot of people in America. And I did a piece in the Washington Post. It was a huge piece, two-page piece on the whole. I went back to Reconstruction and traced how the very poverty that we were witnessing in 1995, right? Was it 1995? Is that right? 2005. Was it 1995? I can't remember. 2005. The very poverty that we were witnessing in the 21st century, right, was poverty that could directly be traced back to Reconstruction and post-slavery. And so there is a nexus for black women in this country and how they have been defined, okay? Stick with me. By that, I simply mean that if you go back to slavery, you tell me what images you immediately think of when you think of black women. You think of Aunt Jemima, right? Heavy set, the cook, the always happy, she's suckling other people's babies. She's taking care of everything. You think of Sojourner Truth saying, well, ain't I a woman? Why is that man dropping his coat in a puddle for that woman over there? Ain't I a woman? Why do I have to go in the fields and chop wood and carry the baby and get beat at night, maybe raped at night, and still go to work and still do the same thing? And you think of Harriet Tubman running through the woods and trying to free her fellow slaves through the Underground Railroad. And when you think of black women, none of those images, Alan, depicts a feminine, soft, gentle, gentile, sensual, sacred woman. None of those images fit us. Those images are reserved for white women. That's real talk. You want real talk? I'll give you real talk. So if you want to know how black women got defined the way they are, it didn't just happen with Don Imus feeling like he could call us nappy-headed hoes. It didn't just start in 2007. It didn't just start, in the many incidences that we could name where the Pepsi commercial where the sister's throwing the can and she's smacking her man in the back of the head, throwing his face in a pie and trying to hit a white woman in the head. And, you know, these images come out of a long history of people accepting that black women are this way. Because in truth of matter of fact, no matter how pretty we are, no matter how soft we may be, we are still, at the end of the day, I'm not even sure that many see us as women. And that's a whole other discussion for another day, and that's in the book. I strongly recommend chapter 2. But what I'm saying is there is a history here that you've got to confront and deal with to get to why black women have been portrayed very successfully in this way and defeminized and in many ways dehumanized. I hope I didn't get too, you know, I don't know, academic in that, but hopefully that made some sense.
No, you being real, which again baffles me because you criticized my book, which is
So get over it. You will be all right.
So, I mean,
I didn't criticize
you know,
your book.
I can't
you
understand if you're
said.
Not upfront, straightforward
oh,
communication or
please tell
not.
Me you ain't going to act like that frat brother of yours. Please tell me not. Let's let
you
me
said
not.
What?
I mean, nothing anyway. You know, you heard what I said.
I didn't hear you. No, please.
I'll tweet
that.
You about it. Anyway, I'm just saying, let's not
what,
take
what
it
challenges first. Do black women have today that you would say they may have not had? Now, some of them, of course, are longstanding. You just expressed a lot of them. But is there any, for lack of a better word, new challenges that black women have right now that say they didn't have 10, 15, 20 years ago?
Sure, and I think that's a great question. And that's why I was very interested in doing research on Gen X and Gen Y black women, women in their 20s, 30s, and 40s now. Not that I don't care about sisters in their 50s and 60s. But they were in focus groups because we use them to what I'll call set a barometer of what the norm is. And by that, I mean when I look at my mother's 64 years old. She's a classic baby boomer born right after the war, married to one man, you know, her life, two kids, is a nurse, you know, which is a very traditional female career, very, you know, spiritual, very, you know, just a clean living, good, you know, woman of her generation, you know, kind of had it all, husband, kids, you know, everything. Fast forward to her daughter and to her nieces, et cetera, who are, you know, 20, 30 years behind. They are career women of achievement, own their own homes. Like, my mom tells me the story how she couldn't even get a credit card without my dad signing it. In fact, after she had my brother, she didn't want any more children, so, you know, she had an operation for that, and my dad had to sign the papers or they wouldn't give her the operation. This is in the 70s. So to make the point that, you know, women, black women in particular, have gained a lot of economic power, a lot of socioeconomic power, a lot of political power in the sense of self-empowerment, but it has come at a great price to the things that many sisters want and that they told us they wanted in the survey, and that's namely love and relationship and love and family.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to take a call right now from a former Blog Talk Radio host by the name of Jason 69 Barnes. Jason, you there?
I am here. What's going on, Alan Roger Curry?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Yourself?
I am quite well.
And what's your question or comment for my guest, Sophia A. Nelson?
Wow. I don't even know where to start, but I'll start here. You made a lot of reference to the historical why, how come black women are perceived. And actually, I think that black women need to get over it, as you told Alan Roger Curry a little while ago, and just deal with the fact that the stereotypes are there for a reason. We don't need to know what all of the reasons are and the whys and wherefores and hows and everything. You guys just need to start adjusting your attitude and stop being so arrogant and condescending in the way that you treat black men. It's not our fault that you guys have this negative connotation or this negative stereotype attached to you. Why don't you just try dealing with it? If you want to be a calm, soft, nurturing, or you want to be perceived that way, maybe you should start embodying it rather than being the snipish, bitchy, controlling, you know, mamas, you know, all of those things that you're complaining about. Because I'm getting tired of black men always having to be told by black women, oh, you don't understand. You need to understand us and you defining what our relationship should be to you rather than you doing some self-analysis, black women, and getting your own stuff together and making the adjustments that you need to do rather than putting it off on society, feminist, all these other things that have moved you into that for because you are supposedly the backbone of the black family, but that backbone is weak and shattered right now because black women will not be held accountable for their own failings. You guys are doing, making great strides when it comes to your careers in the business place and everything, but it's at sacrificing all the things that you're actually supposed to be here for, which is the family. So I don't agree with the whole mindset of we need to look at history and the way black women are portrayed and brothers need to start being nice. And then you also made statements regarding black men and, not sleeping with women or we shouldn't be. That's not what's important in life. Who are you to say what's important in life? Just because it's important to you to have a nurturing and long-lasting relationship and develop a partnership doesn't mean it's right. That's just my sense, though.
Wow. Okay.
Is he finished?
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, we'll go on to the next caller. I will just completely ignore that diatribe. It's just not even worth a response. It's just not, because he didn't hear anything I said, and he's on a rant, and he's clearly very angry, and I don't know why, but he is. So he needs to look at himself a little bit.
Okay, well, actually, at this moment, we're going to take a, if any other callers have a question or a comment for my guest for the evening, 646-478-5710 is the number, 646-478-5710. I will be right back in probably 3 or 4 minutes after I let my guest get a swig of water, and we'll continue this conversation.
Hey, I'm Dangerously. And you may have read my short story, Till Death Do Us Part, in the New York Times best-selling anthology, Succulent, Chocolate Flavor 2, presented by Zane. Well, things get even hotter between the pages of Keep Your Panties Up and Your Skirt Down. Check it out at PantiesUpSkirtDown.com. And remember, keep it dangerous.
What's up, folks? This is Alan Roger Curry of Upfront and Straightforward and Mode 1 fame. And if you're a music lover, I urge you to listen to Madison Media Radio. It's not just music, but it is music with a purpose. Right here on the Blog Talk Radio, Internet Radio Network.
Mode 1.
Do you think that guys, to one degree or another, have to play the role of the bad boy to attract women, or they just need to remain who they are and just, you know, be patient?
No, they need to combine their game. They need to go in with an attitude that I'm going to be a gentleman, but I'm also letting you know that I'm attracted to you. You know, I want to kiss you. I want to hold you. I want to, you know, I want to take you out. I want to date you. You know, if you think I want to get in your pants, you're probably right. But at the same time, I like you. I like you. I want to see you.
You know, there's more single women than married women in the United States.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
It's over 51%. Yeah.
There's more what?
Okay.
There's more single women than married women in the United States right now. First time ever in history.
Mindset is correct. Somewhere there's a woman that's balanced, that's God-focused, that's, you know, she gives because she wants to give, not because she's trying to hook somebody with her giving, but she values herself. She recognizes her good qualities, acknowledges her bad qualities, and this is the person that's balanced and ready to be in a healthy relationship.
So listeners know there's a letter in my first book, Letters to a Young Brother, Manifest Your Destiny. It's called Finding Your Swagger. In fact, it's so funny. I just got a letter from a young brother that he read my book and it's changed his life. And he also put it in, he said, and you know what? I found my swagger and now all the girls like me like you said they would. I was so tickled by that. Yeah.
Oh, man, you gotta love it.
Single, lonely, confused, join me. I invite you to listen to the most informative and entertaining talk radio show on the internet for single men and single women looking to enhance their social lives, love lives, and or sex lives. Get on the phone right now and tell one or two of your single friends to listen to Upfront and Straightforward with yours truly, Alan Roger Curry, Thursday evenings at 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, and 7 p.m. on the West Coast, right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. We now return to my interview with book author, political strategist, columnist, and commentator Sophia A. Nelson Esquire on Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry right here on the Blog Talk Radio Internet Radio Network. Welcome back to another episode of Upfront and Straightforward with Alan Roger Curry. Tonight I am interviewing a young lady who has a book coming out next month entitled Black Woman Redefined, Dispelling the Myths and Discovering Fulfillment in the Age of Michelle Obama. And her name is Sophia A. Nelson. Ms. Nelson, does First Lady Obama, is she going to receive a copy of this book?
She certainly will. But let me go back to your last caller because, on hindsight, I do need to address what he said. A couple of things come to mind. First and foremost, as I started out when we talked about this, black men were invited to be a part of this book. This is not an opinion book, and I'd, you know, loving both Steve Harvey and Hill Harper, I had a lot of respect for them as good brothers that they are. They wrote opinion books, okay? I did not. We invested a lot of money, a lot of time to get to not only the what and the why there are these perceptions and these problems clearly surrounding black women, but we also wanted to get to how and what is the way out, what is the way towards fulfillment and happiness, and I'll get to your Michelle Obama piece in just a moment, so bear with me. But I think what's disconcerting when you hear a brother like that, because I'm really disappointed that he didn't pay attention. And if he knew anything about this book, what he would know is I do deal with the sisters. And the whole premise behind redefining something means you need to change it. Does that not strike a bell? I mean, does the brother not know how to go to the dictionary and read? To define something is to define it one way. To redefine it is to define it a different way. And I'm telling black women, myself, starting with me, and with all of us, these high-achieving women. In fact, a lot of what he said, I was scratching my head like, geez, he didn't listen to what we said in a previous segment because I just said all of this. He was so angry. And what bothers me is there's this visceral anger between black men and black women, and I don't know what it's all about. I don't feel that way about black men. I like black men, so I don't know what's wrong with the brother and with the sisters. But what I do know is that it's that kind of, like, there's this article going around now, I don't know if you saw it on the internet, that somebody wrote, the girl on Essence, the blogger, Tia Brown, wrote about submissive and how she can't wait to be submissive, but the problem she's having is you can't just walk up to a woman as a man, not have a job, not have anything to offer, not be about anything and say, I'm man, hear me roar, submit to me, woman, you dog. If you do that, that's not going to work. So what I'm saying is that this is a shared responsibility here when it comes to the relationship challenges. When it comes to societal perceptions and definitions about black women and black men, by the way, Alan, and you're a been a black man your whole life, and I'm sure you've been pulled over by the police when maybe it was questionable, and I'm sure you've endured all the things that happened to you as a black male in this culture that unless you're a black male or a black person, you aren't familiar with. So black men are depicted as angry. Black men are depicted as killers. They're depicted as violent. They're depicted as criminals. These are all stereotypes of black men, are they not? So for him to be so ignorant, and yes, he's ignorant, to say that our history does not have a great deal to do with, I didn't say anything about making excuses. In fact, my book is not about making excuses. I'm calling on us to deal with us. The first sentence of the book, when you read it, you're going to be like, oop, there it is. Bottom line is, if you can't deal with you first, you can't get past any of this stuff. So if the caller could have got past his anger and actually asked some questions and engaged in a dialogue, he might have found that I, in fact, did exactly what he thought needed to be done in the book, interestingly enough. But this is what happens when we're angry and we want to throw stones and attack.
Well, I'm not going to speak for him, but I will say I've known Jason for a while. He's very outspoken, which I respect. I don't necessarily think he was angry. I think the gist of a lot of what he said
I have from men and women was, like, man, who was that angry?
The gist of what he was saying was that not all of the stereotypes that are attached to a good number of black women, not all women, not most black women, but a good number of them, are not totally invalid. He was basically saying, and I'm not sure if I'm reading it right, and is that a lot of sisters kind of invite some of the stereotypes themselves. So, I mean, he has his opinion.
Hey, what did I say about what happens? If you, Toni Morrison said it best, the definitions belong to the definer, not the defined. So if you've gone throughout history, have you read Toni Morrison? Have you read Alice Walker? Alice Walker got attacked for the color purple. Why do black men get mad every time they are exposed for their faults? My book doesn't even deal with them or any of their drama. It does not. At all. I don't say one negative word about black men in my book, much to your last caller's chagrin. I don't. I don't engage in that because it's not constructive and I want no part of it. I'm interested in healing sisters and helping sisters who are angry, who are broken, who are suffering, who have been sexually abused, who have been beat down, who have been put upon. I don't want them to live that way anymore.
I agree with that. But, okay, now let's take a moment, though, and talk. As you call it, real talk. Now, talking about the way black men and black women interact with each other, I can use excerpts of this very interview and this very discussion. Now, with all due respect, Ms. Nelson, you came on my show and essentially attacked my book.
I disagree with that now, and if you say that again, I'm telling you I'm hanging up because you're saying something that's not true. You took something personal. I didn't say anything about you or your book. What I said was, black men who want to engage in this, I told you, baby, that I was just going to hit it tonight. Therefore, I was upfront and direct with you, so I'm off the hook. I find that to be foolish, immature, and not something that is moving our race in a productive direction. 73% of our children are born out of wedlock. That's not just a problem. That's immoral. Mm-hmm. And yes, it is immoral. When you got 73% of your black children without daddies and the very black women that this Joker was attacking, and he attacked us, by the way, really clear, play your tape. The very women he was attacking are the only ones left trying to raise those black male children because the brothers have stepped off and out. Deal with that.
That's a generalization, Sophia. That's a generalization right there.
That's what? Is it really? You better go look at the numbers. How many single black female head of households are there in this country? It's over 60%. How many out of wedlock birth children? You want to talk data with me? Let's talk. We can talk all night long.
Well, first of all, you gotta do the woosah with me. You gotta do the woosah.
I didn't come on this show to deal with this kind of drama. This is drama. This isn't real talk. It's let's vilify. Let's not even have a discussion about what the book is about and what we're trying to deal with as black people and why it's important. Let's go on the usual rant. Black women ain't no good. They need to change their attitude. They need to submit. Don't you think we should be tired of that conversation? Don't we need a new one? Really, don't we? Really?
There's a lot of conversations that are repetitive among black folk, among men and women, among Americans. And my show is designed to let my guests express their opinions based on whatever knowledge, training, education they have, areas of expertise. And I also allow my listeners to call in and either ask questions of the guests or to express their well-thought-out opinion. Now, again, I don't know if I'm going to say I agree with everything Jason said or defend everything he said, but I will say this. He's just a listener with his opinion. He expressed some opinions that are different from yours, and you have to respect that. He doesn't agree with everything you say. You don't agree with everything he says, and we just move forward from that. I don't think it was anything that was a unnecessary comments that he made. I don't think there was any comments that were just out of order or blatantly disrespectful towards sisters. He just had some strong opinions. He's always been a brother with strong opinions, and you are a sister with strong opinions. So this is called upfront and straightforward, and that's what we try to keep it.
We almost done because I've been on for like an hour and 17 minutes, and I, you know, just kind of want to know.
Okay, your excuse, sister.
All right, but thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Okay. All right. Yeah, this show was scheduled to go actually until 11:55 Eastern Time, at least 11:25 Eastern Time. But, yeah, I'm going to go ahead and wrap up. But, hey, oh, well, first I'm going to take another call from, wait, first Neil. Neil, now my guest is gone, so you can't ask a question. Do you have any comment, though, about what was said?
Wow, I was just kind of, I didn't expect this to happen.
Hey.
That's all I can say.
You know, this is what happens, man. And, hey, all I got to say is I'm always defend my show.
I
defend my listeners. I mean, as grown adults, you cannot express opinions without respecting the fact that people are going to have opinions that are different than yours.
Exactly.
And, you know, I'm going to say this. My guest, she's a very intelligent woman. She's a well-accomplished woman. I'm not going to say anything about her that is going to be particularly disparaging. But I will say this. If I have at least one criticism of the way this interview went and the way this discussion went, I did not like the fact that she is not willing, at least in my opinion, I'll stress this in my opinion, she is not willing to accept opinions that are different from her own. And but yet, it seems like she wants everybody to accept her opinions, and that's just not how that's not how life works. It's definitely not how my show works. So anyway, any other thoughts, Neil?
Well, I was just, you know, I was going to bring this up with her, but I just want to get your view on this because I think it was just a timely topic. I just saw, you know, something, you know. Lisa Ray, I saw the show, the last episode that she did, not tonight, but last week, and I was going to cover this in my blog tomorrow, but I really think that she really pushed black women back by the way she acted on the episode. I don't know if you watch her show, The Real McCoy. I don't know if you watch that.
I don't watch it, no.
Okay, I just happened to catch it last week, and she did some really crazy stuff on that show. And I just wanted to get your guest opinion on it, and because I thought her book might have been kind of timely with this topic. But, I mean, one of the things about the show, it's obviously a reality show, and one of the things about the show is that, you know, she's looking for love. She's one of those typical, you know, the stereotypical black woman who's attractive. You know, she's looking for love. She can't find love. And, you know, they showed a couple of different segments in that show where she, like, one segment, she went into a matchmaker's office. And, you know, the matchmaker was asking her, you know, what does she look for in a man? And basically what she said was, you know, he's got to be powerful. You know, if he's powerful, then it means he has money. I mean, it was no real substance at all. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And she also mentioned something about he can't have a big, you know, D word, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because it hurts and it doesn't feel good and it's backing up. Let's just make love. She said some real quick thing. I was like, man, when you first see that, you think it's funny. But when you think about it, I mean, that can't be helping the image of black women. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I agree.
Okay.
And what you just said kind of goes to 6ix9ine's point when he called in. And that's what he's saying. And I do generally agree with what he said. In essence, he was saying that, you know, not all of the negative stereotypes that sisters experience are invalid. Some of them are. Some of them are exaggerated and invalid. But there's some, quite frankly, and I would say the same thing about black men, to be fair. about black men. There's some things that black men, some stereotypes we have that are unfair and invalid, but there's other stereotypes we have that a lot of us bring on ourselves. So, matter of fact, let me bring in back Jason 6ix9ine Barnes. You there, Jason?
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me back on.
Oh, no problem, man. I'm here also talking with Neo. Now, you expressed your thoughts, mm-hmm. and then initially she chose not to offer rebuttal, but then, of course, after you got off the line, she chose to offer rebuttal. So now, of course, I'm going to offer you the opportunity to offer rebuttal to her rebuttal.
All right. First off, she called me angry. She said that I was ignorant, and it turned into the name-calling thing. And this is one of the things that I found with a lot of sisters is that when they are confronted with a man who challenges them, you know, I'm not a brother that was raised by women and that will capitulate every time a woman says, this is the way it is, and yes, dear. I just challenged what she had been saying because she kept going back to the volume of research that she had done as far as why women act this way. And to me, and I think I was very clear and said, we don't need the excuses anymore the reasons. It's a matter of moving forward. And then before she even started, she came on board and she was going after your philosophy that you put out in mode one as far as being upfront and straightforward, and then she called it childish and couple of other adjectives because,
Okay, wait, stop there. Neil, you still on the line?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Now, I have my own opinions, but I always like to get other people's opinions. So you two were listening to the show. Was I off base for accusing her for attacking? She claimed she was not attacking my book, but I surely felt like... My book, because to me, the philosophy of my book is the same thing as my book. So did you feel like I was off base for accusing her of attacking my book?
Not really. I think she did kind of go kind of hard in this. I can't remember. Did she say she didn't read your book?
Oh, I know she hasn't read my book. That's
okay. Yeah,
she hasn't read my book. What it started off, actually, I'll go back. It started even, a lot of times during intermission breaks, I talk to my guests, while the intermission is playing. And at the beginning of my show, I had some news and notes, and I mentioned that, this wasn't even my news and notes. This was more so about my upcoming guests. I have a guest coming up that wrote actually a very nice article. I don't know if it was an article or a blog post, but she talked about how men who are essentially mode one, who are upfront and straightforward with their sexual desires, interests, and intentions, get demonized in society. They're looked at as the bad guys, but what she essentially says is the guys who are playing the games with the smooth-talking bullshit that are really the bad guys, and that's what I essentially say in my book.
Right.
And so I was emphasizing that about this guest, and anyway, during the intermission break, she said, Alan, I can't wait to talk about this because that old straightforward stuff is a bunch of bullshit. And I said, we're going to have to talk about that.
Wow.
And I thought she was going to say something lighthearted, to be truthful. But she went on to essentially attack the contents of my book, saying that she feels like straightforward honesty is contributing to the, all the hurt and pain between men and women, and particularly black men and black women. But I disagree, and I will stand by this argument. It is manipulative head games that have damaged male-female relationships more than ever. Than I don't think you can ever say that straightforward honesty damages relationships. That's like saying it's better to lie.
No, what she was saying, it seemed as though, and because she decided to go ahead and leave, we won't ever find out what she really thinks once we get past the emotional blockage that she had. It seems as though, unless it's her opinion and it's a woman stating what is... her being honest about what she wants, then it's not okay. Women are always saying, I need to come or I need to do this. You need to do this, 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 and this for me. And men conform to what their expectations are. And to be told, you know what? Wait a minute. Pump your brakes. You aren't what you're billing yourself out to be, because honestly, we can all look at it from a few different viewpoints. When it comes to male-female relationships, you know, if you want to go religious, women are supposed to be a helpmeet, the helpmates, and they're supposed to be subservient and follow and everything, but they nowadays, women come with all of these rules and stipulations as to what they will do and why they will do it. So, you know, it's always, well, if he does this, then I'll do this, or I might do this, but as soon as he steps out of line. So what I'm saying, with all of her arguments, I can't believe she was an attorney, and I'm pretty sure she wasn't, a trial attorney, because to not be able to discuss or have a debate based on the comments that she made, it shows. And, you know, I'm not going to go to the point where I'm going to say call her ignorant or angry, you know, as she called me. But it just shows a marked lack of backbone for her to sit over there and bow out of your conversation the way she did.
Yeah, I agree. I think, a lot of black women, man, I don't want to harp on the racial thing, but I just can't help it because, like, I live in Las Vegas. And you don't really see too many black women. I mean, I'm not saying they're not here, but you don't see too many. And it seems like the ones you meet, it seems like they have a hard time when you do disagree with them. Let's say she is educated, she has a good job and so forth. And when you disagree with them, their quickest way of handling that is just to leave the situation. They don't want to really confront you and debate you. I find that to be a lot true when I'm dealing with black women for some reason. I mean, I don't want to start stereotyping and add to the problem, but that's what it seems like to me. But I'm hoping with her, I'm hoping with Sophia, I'm really hoping her real issue was just the fact that she had a cold and she was kind of under the weather. I'm hoping that's what the issue was.
Defense, maybe this did contribute to, I don't know, some of her harshness or whatever, but she did say she was dealing with a fever and a cold, and it affected her voice. But I think that might have just, I don't know. My central criticism is, and there's a lot more probably good I can say about it than critical, but I just didn't feel like that she was a person, based on this interview and this discussion, who can respectfully handle opinions that were different from her own. I mean, because to me, I didn't think 6ix9ine said anything that was, harshly disrespectful towards women or towards her. He just has a strong opinion. And Jason has always had strong opinions. And his opinions are such that you're either going to agree with him or you're not. It's as simple as that. And but one thing I'm critical of people is people who criticize people for even having an opinion. It's one thing to say, okay, you express your opinion, I disagree with it. It's another thing to say you're not even entitled to that opinion. You know, and I felt like she did not respect the fact that Jason, but hey, you know, I always keep it real on my show. That was an interview that definitely, I've only had maybe two or three over the last 4 years interviews that I had a certain degree of expectations towards or a certain degree of, you know, a certain attitude towards, and it went totally different from how I anticipated it. And I thought this was going to be a very lighthearted interview, very entertaining interview. I thought she was going to get into some of the details of her book. I definitely didn't expect it to become, for lack of a better word, contentious and antagonistic. But that's exactly what happened. Again, on a personal note, I just took offense that, and this is not just her against her individually, this is against anybody. If you're going to come on my show and challenge me or criticize my book, I'm going to have a boatload to say if you come try it. Now, if you bring up something intelligent that's based on some facts, then I'm going to listen to you. I'm going to respect your opinion, I'm going to respect your argument, even though I may disagree with it. But you can't just come saying that upfront, straightforward communication as relates to dating relationships is representative of immaturity or foolishness. That's not based on anything other than a random opinion. And,
right. I guess it just shows how deep the problem really is. I mean, if you guys are just talking about politics, that's one thing, but we're talking about black men and black women, and we have a black man and a black woman talking about it. So I guess it just shows how deep and how, you know, severe the wounds really are, you know. It doesn't really matter where you come from, how educated you are, it's still a deep, deep wound, and it's just hard when you got a strong brother talking to a strong female, because let's face it, Roger, you and I know this to be true. Mm-hmm. Most of the sisters today, they used to dealing with weak brothers.
True.
I mean, they used to talking, you know, a lot of guys are simps out there. So that's who they used to talking to.
Yeah.
They used to controlling the conversation, they used to dominate, and they used to get in their way.
Right.
So tonight we had a different situation.
Exactly. I'm going to bring in another caller. Area code 978. Who's this?
Hey, it's Solomon Black. How you doing, Alan?
This,
Mr. Curry.
Hi, is it good? This is who again?
Solomon Black. Solomon Black.
Oh, what's up, man?
How you doing?
Now, what are your thoughts? Any comments you have? Well, first of all, were you listening to the interview and discussion from the beginning?
No, I didn't get it all.
Okay.
I tried. I was caught up in another business deal, so I couldn't get out of it. But from what I heard, though, as you guys describe it, listening to the panel and the guys discuss this, this is part and parcel for a lot of problems with a lot of black men and a lot of black women. I mean, it is what it is. And then we've talked about this so many times about them going after these bad boys. And then when a good guy actually comes off, he may be strong. Oh, and that's one thing I wanted to ask you guys. How many of you guys have come out with or have been raised by single moms?
I have.
Just so you know, I have not. My father raised me. So
okay.
I was raised by a black man.
You were raised
by
a black
man. Yeah, I was raised
by
both my
father.
Mother and father. I was raised in a two-parent family.
Yeah, so we have a nice dynamic here. We have a little bit of everything.
Right. The reason why I wanted to focus on that is because I noticed that there's a lot of contention, if you want to put it that way, tension, anxiety issues when you're dealing with black men who have been raised by their fathers, with a vast majority of black women who have been raised just by their mothers. So I'm not sure. I didn't know if she was actually raised by her mother, but I do know that she has a strong influence by the females. She is going to do exactly what she did. So, I mean, it's almost to be expected to a certain degree. I hate to put it that way, but it seems that from my own research and dealing with a lot of these women, if they're like that, we're looking at trouble, because it's very hard to get across and, you know, articulate in a manner where you guys can have a healthy, considerate, cordial dialogue.
Well, I wanted to ask you a question, Alan, you know, and be brutally honest, like you always are, upfront and straightforward.
Okay.
Now, you know me. If I have come on your show and, you know, I've, you know, called people everything but a child of God, and you've heard my show. So in my mind, I don't think I was being disrespectful to your guest. I don't think I came across now harshly and strongly, and I addressed quite a few points, and I understand the fact that she possibly couldn't get it together to respond, which is why, you know, she just tried to downplay me, as many sisters will do. And then once I was off the line, she was like, okay, well, now I'm going to address them, because I'm not going to argue. And it wasn't an argument. I just voiced my opinion and my response to what she was saying. So do you think, Alan, that I was coming across as harsh? Well, harsh, yes, but was I disrespectful, or was I calling her out of her name, or did
no,
I wouldn't even
go as far as say you were harsh, at least not in my opinion. I would have to re-listen to it, but as you know, I've heard you on my show before, I've heard you on your show when you had it, and I've definitely, anybody who's listeners, if you Facebook friends with J69, you know he don't talk about anything soft. If he gonna throw an opinion out, it's gonna be a 99-mile-per-hour fastball. But I thought you expressed your opinions. Here's what was ironic, and I know when she hears me make this comment, she's probably gonna give me some blowback, but so be it. But what was interesting is, she was accusing you afterwards of calling in and being angry, but actually your demeanor was very calm. She was the one who, quite frankly, became angry in her demeanor. Her whole demeanor was like full of anger, and that's why I said, you know, it's time for you to say woosah, and that even agitated her more.
Oh, you
but,
for that one.
But no, honestly, Jason, yeah, in your defense, man, you didn't come across as angry. You just had, your opinion was very strong. And again, I would have to listen to everything to see if I agree with everything you said. But I know the parts I will say I agree with is that, and correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of what you were saying is that there's some of these negative stereotypes that sisters have put on them that they basically brought on or invited themselves.
Absolutely. And that with her display this evening, and she's about to drop a book, and she's an author now. She's about to, her display underlined everything that she was sitting over there talking about that needed to be changed. So it kind of takes away from the message that I'm assuming that she's trying to put across in her book about, okay, let's look at the historical facts, why it happens. And then she also said that she's trying to offer some solutions, but obviously she can't apply them in her own life. So why would anybody give any credence to anything she was saying since she can't even apply them to herself?
Uh-oh. We got some drama going on here, dude. First of all, Jason, you'll appreciate this. There's a female friend of mine. I'm not going to say her name, but she's a close friend of mine. She listens to most of my shows. Now, some people might be listening to this right now and say, oh, why are those men ganging up on Sophia, especially after she's left? And they might think all the women were on her side during this conversation. But I just got a Facebook message, again, from one of my female friends, and I'm not going to say, it's pretty lengthy, I'm not going to repeat everything she said, but she essentially says that she was very disappointed in Miss Nelson's appearance on my show. She felt like it was very unprofessional for her to, like, want to get off the show and hang up. And she also felt, like I said about you, Jason, she felt like she should have just respected that you had some opinions that were different from her own instead of getting, as my friend called it, very defensive. She felt like Sophia became very defensive in response to your comments. And I hope this doesn't turn into some kind of war of words between her and myself, because
yeah, y'all are Twitter friends, or
yeah, we're Twitter friends and we're Facebook friends. And
hold on, have you checked?
She's on Twitter. She's on Twitter.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at her Facebook page now. No drama has really started. She just says her last comment on her Facebook was, "If you were listening to the radio interview, you just got an earful." I will not demean black men, nor will I allow sisters to be demeaned.
Wait a minute. How is she not going to demean a black man when she sat over there and called me ignorant, illiterate, and quite a few other adjectives?
Yes, she did. It's on tape. Yes, she did call you ignorant. So I don't know if that qualifies in all people's books as demeaning a black man, but I would have to say, I just have a problem. And Jason, me and you have talked about this before. And you guys can chime in, but it's one thing to express opinions, and then it's another thing to just express some random opinions. Like if I just say, "Hey, Jason, you're a jerk," you know,
don't you like me, man?
Your natural attitude would be like, "Okay," and that's based on what? Like, did I drink your last apple?
Did I
date your last girl? I mean, what's the basis for that? And, you know, anybody can come out and say Kevin Durant is the best player in the NBA. But then the next question is going to be, based on what? Are you talking about points scored per game? Are you talking about number of team victories? Are you talking about number of awards? People are going to want to know, what is your comment, your opinion, based on? And I don't know, for her to say that you said some stuff that was ignorant. Again, I'm expressing my opinion. I didn't think that anything you said was ignorant, but I'm asking the other two guys who are on the line, if you heard, first of all, Neil and Zolan, did you hear when Jason was talking, did you hear his comments?
No, I sure did. Right before, I mean, probably like right on the hour, my computer shut down, so I missed a couple of minutes. When I came back, you were going to your commercial. That's when I called in, so I actually missed what he said.
Okay, I wish this had some kind of playback feature, but you'll have to hear it in the archives. But Jason, if you could kind of sum up, you don't have to do it word for word, but sum up essentially what you called in and said to my guest tonight.
Basically, I said that, you know, women or she, you know, her name is Sophia. I said, why are you sitting there going back, blaming everything on slavery? I think it's an excuse. It doesn't matter. Well, it does matter. But when it comes to women, black women having negative stereotypes about them, they need to get a self of, they need to own their own issues and make changes and stop sitting over there trying to make it about black men. If black men did this, then we would do this, or making it black men's issue. Then I also challenged her statement when it came to, she had said some things about with Alan Roger Curry and his and Mode One. She had said that it was childish and foolishness as far as being upfront and straightforward. And I said, well, I don't understand, and I'm paraphrasing, you know, you'll have to go back and listen to the archive, but I don't understand how you can sit over there and who are you to say what's important in life? Because she made a statement saying, you know, none of that's important. What's important is cultivating a good relationship, being in touch and communicating and all of these other things. And I'm like, who are you to say what's important? And why is it that women get to define what's important when it comes to relationships, men, and everything else? Women are supposed to be the backbone. Black women are always touting themselves as being the backbone of a black family. But most of the time, they're not holding their end of the bargain up anymore, because they are supposed, they're doing, having great strides when it comes to their careers and everything else, but they're losing steps when it comes to black family. They're not a soft place to land. They're not ladies. They're not, you know, great helpmates and all that. It, depending on your, if you're looking at it religiously and everything, they've lost all of that based on, you know, the feminist side and all of these other influences, but they still want to be praised for, you know, their career accomplishments. But our families are falling apart, and supposedly that's their baby to raise. And
you said, excuse me, Jason, for cutting you off, you said Adrian. I don't see Adrian in the chat room. You said she was on the line. I don't see her on the line either.
Okay, she's saying, you know, yeah, she keeps on saying, you know, I've been trying to call in. I'm in the queue. So.
Oh, well, text her, and if you can, and tell her if she wants to call back in, she can. I didn't.
Okay.
I didn't see her in my queue. Let me see. I think I got another person calling. It's one of those internet numbers. 111. Who is this? I don't see the area code 111.
Yeah, hi, Alan. This is Richard. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. How you doing, Richard?
Oh, I'm just fine, thank you.
Now, were you here for most of the show?
Go ahead.
I was just asking, were you here for most of the show?
I was here for a little of it. I cut out and listened to a guy announcing his wedding and engagement, excuse me. And I wanted to correct some things related to the Bible, because I know the Bible and the church really stands between men and women, and that's very unfortunate. But go ahead with your point.
No, I don't really have a point. I was going to ask you if you heard most of the interview and discussion with Ms. Sophia Nelson. I was going to ask you just simply if you had any comments, any thoughts about what transpired.
Well, unfortunately, I didn't, but I was going to comment on your subject line.
Oh, okay.
I heard you make some points, but may I just say that the
First of all, did you hear any of the interview with Sophia A. Nelson?
Unfortunately not. I just
Okay, then you might not be, a lot of what we're talking about is probably going over your head then, because to give you kind of a recap, she, you know, I invited her on the show. She has a book coming out next month called Black Woman Redefined, Dispelling Myths and Discovering Fulfillment in the Age of Michelle Obama. And I will preface my comments by saying the woman, you know, when you look at her resume, the things she's done, she's, you know, a very accomplished woman. But the conversation tonight did take what I would call a contentious and antagonistic turn, and part of that involved one of my good friends who's on the line right now, Jason, called in and expressed his opinion. And among other things, one of the things he was saying is that he feels like, we were talking about stereotypes. She was saying that there's a lot of unfair and invalid stereotypes that black women have had to endure for not only years but decades and centuries. And one of Jay's comments was that a lot of the stereotypes, maybe not all, but a good number of them, the sisters bring on themselves by their behavior, their different quirks, their different attributes that they maintain and are unwilling to change. And she became very initially defensive. First, she didn't respond to Jason's comments, but later on she responded to him and called him ignorant and whatever else. So anyway, it was kind of, let's say, it was a heated discussion. And the thing I honestly kind of took personal is that she attacked, I have a book out, I don't know if you know Richard, but I think I told you about my book before. But my book, Mole One, Let the Women Know What You're Really Thinking,
yeah,
is about being men being upfront and straightforwardly honest about their romantic and or sexual desires, interests,
absolutely,
and intentions. And
yes,
she said that she felt like that was representative of immaturity and foolishness.
Okay. Well, may I comment now, Alan? I'm fully up to speed.
Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, because, see, this is a recurring situation. The thing of it is, we have not confronted women directly, because I often say about 95, oftentimes 100% of what women are complaining about, black women specifically, not all of them, but the vast majority of them, they are responsible. They have it in their power to correct about 100% of what they're complaining about. If the guys are asshole jerks or whatever, stop choosing them. If you're getting pregnant and the guy doesn't hang around, make sure you have a commitment before you have sex. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what the problems are. But I was listening to our sister up north, and I know this flows in together, and they want men to be responsible for everything, even those things that they should be responsible for. Like me, I don't agree with men lying to women. However, women are into flim-flamming and jipping men and playing these games, and so men just up the ante. They play the games too. So I think being honest with women is the way to go. But I'm going to tell you something. A lot of women do not want honesty. They don't want it.
They don't.
But we've
got
to feed.
Totally,
we've got to continue to feed them a healthy dose of honesty, and just point out to them, you know, the things that you're complaining about. You caused them. They are the cause of the things they complain about, and they make bad choices in men, and they expect men to somehow rectify that. Men can't rectify their choices. They have to. That onus or burden or responsibility, I should say, is on them. And also, Alan, you'll probably recognize the government heavily subsidizes the inappropriate behavior of women. They do it in reproduction. They have created a whole market around women having illegitimate children, sexual harassment, women not having to register for the military draft. And, of course, businesses subsidize women by sponsoring ladies' nights. They use women as sexual bait, and women allow themselves to be used that way. So I agree with you 100% that there should be forthrightness and honesty from men toward women, and we've also got to get women on board with that. Because when women play deceitfully, like they don't want to be involved in a relationship, they play this "you've got to chase me" game, that is not adult behavior. That is not honest behavior. And so we need to point out to them all the nuances where they manifest deceit.
Yeah, all good points, Richard. And let me get in another caller. I think this is my boy EVP3. Is this EVP3?
What's going on? What's going on?
What's up, brother? Now, I'm sure, were you here for most of the interview, EVP?
I was here for most of the interview, and I was laying back, but I was like, I got to get in here. I got to put my stamp on this show. She got me riled up. I was just going, even if she was still on the line, I was like, I got to. But 6ix9ine jumped in there, and I saw what happened there, and then she's out, so I didn't get to call in. But I just seriously, well, I'll just start by here. Number one, I definitely thought, you know, it was obviously, and she didn't say that she did, but it's obviously she did and read your book. But she was definitely, it's my opinion, feelings that she was definitely attacking your principles and the things that you espouse in your book. She was definitely doing that. In terms of when 6ix9ine came up, I've heard him come on the show numerous times, scores of times, and, you know, it was nothing, you know, mean-spirited about what he was doing. He was just being direct. And there was a lot of ways that she could have handled that. And one way could have been just say, I don't have anything to respond to that. He's entitled to his opinion. Thank him for his comments. You know, she could have handled that so many different ways. You know, in a classy fashion that she was. I recall you trying to ask her a question late before she got off the line, and she wouldn't even let you, Alan, get your question out.
It's funny you notice that, EVP, because I'm gonna say this on the air, and if she hears this, I know I'm gonna get some blowback. But do you know, I've been doing this show now for about 3.5-4 years, and it's rare that I've ever had to mute a guest.
Whoa.
I want to say at most there might have only been one previous time when I've had to, maybe for 30 seconds or a minute or so. But three times in this interview, I actually had to mute her microphone because, as you pointed out, EVP, there was a couple times where I was trying to say something or trying to ask a question, and she was basically talking over me. And that's one of my golden rules. I ain't going to let you talk over me. The first time I might let it go, the second time I see that's what you're doing, I'm going to mute your shit.
The thing is,
I very rarely have to do that.
The funny part about that is when she came on the show, she was lambasting you about being so verbose or talkative or chatty and everything, that she had been waiting. And then she turned around and her ramblings went on and on and on. It was like, really? You just got on this brother on his show about him talking too much, and then every time you get on the mic, you can't shut up. So I thought that was funny.
That was very interesting because, she was pretty loquacious, to put it mildly. But again, you know, hey, she has her book. My only piece of advice to her, and I doubt she would ever take advice from me, but... if this is the start of her book tour, I don't know how she's going to do it, because unless she goes on, I think we all know who are on the line here. If you're going to show some shows, they're going to ask you what I call softball questions.
Right.
You know, so tell me what caused you to write the book, and you know, so you know, but
she was actually.
If she goes on any show, whether it's TV or radio, and she has people who are willing to really challenge her on some of the things that she asserts in her book and about, because number one, anytime you're talking about the issue and you bring race into the issue, you're talking about black men or black women or both together or something, that's already just by inherently a sensitive issue. But when you're in her shoes, you're going to have to learn how to not get so, for lack of a better word, defensive when people have different opinions than you. And, you know, so, anybody else got any thoughts on that?
To be an attorney, she should have, you know, she should be better equipped to deal with somebody challenging her without having to compose herself and everything, and especially dealing with calling on a radio show where callers are allowed. You know, you have a show where you allow your callers to speak to your guests. You don't make a secret of it. And any bit of research, since she's so into research, would have shown that people get to have to deal with questions from callers. So with her research, she should have known that and been prepared and then been able to put her Michelle Obama hat on and take a step back and be able to control her emotional output. And you know, actually, I give her no pass because she came on and said, "Oh, I'm sick." You know, that gets no pass.
I know. She came on. Both of you guys make an excellent point. She came on, and so she doesn't deserve any excuses. I want to back up because I just want to make say what I feel. When she referred to my man as being ignorant, and actually I think how she acted in total and leaving the show and the way she backed up, I thought she acted ignorant. I thought the way she acted was a form, in my opinion, a form of ignorance.
Exactly. Let me just say this. This is Richard, if I may. Is my mic
open? Wait, Richard. Hold on. Let EVP finish his stuff.
Oh, I don't agree. I mean, I don't care how many places she went to school, how many degrees, and whatever she has, and I don't question that. I don't doubt it. But I would never, to say this for myself, I would never read anything she, if now in the future, what I've seen, just myself, because I tell you what, because I would believe it's going to be quieted. I would go. She's not even the type of person that would listen. She would not even listen, respectfully disagree. That type of thing. She's not even, you know, in my mind, intelligent to that point where she can just say, "I disagree with that." And here's my thoughts on this. Is what I found. I mean, she won't even listen. She's one of those that we. Women, I'm going to just say it, she's one of those women that we all knew to grow up this way. I want to rid off a bunch of things, basically kind of towards what 6ix9ine has already referred to, and then it's like, you know, talk to the hand type thing. Let me say what I have to say, and then you talk to the hand. Oh, I don't want to hear what you have to say. Like I said, she wouldn't even let Alan get out his questions. She's a guest on his show, and, you know, he's asking questions of his guest. I know what you're going to say. I know. I mean, how do you know what you're going to say? I know where you're going with that. I mean,
yeah, exactly. You see, you caught that, EVP. You're perceptive.
They have to say in a book. I don't want to say my book. I don't want to read her blog. I don't want to read her Twitter words. You know, because you're not even respectful enough to let people say. We all know you're not going to agree with everybody, but you just let them. You know, they have their opinion. So why would they want to listen to what you have to say? She won't even listen. She won't even pay people respect to listen to what they have to say. So anyway, that's just how I'm just kind of, she's kind of just, I mean.
Look, all I got to say is you got to respect the man's house. You in the man's house, respect it.
Yeah.
You can't do that then, you know what I mean? Don't even bother, okay? Yeah. And this poor lady exemplified in many respects from what I've got, what you guys are talking about, a lot of reasons why a lot of guys are moving in different directions. Okay, they're just like, nah. Because she put, like you said, she could have put on the Michelle Obama, but I am glad that she came out and showed her true colors, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, I think Michelle has a quality that most of these women have no idea of, and it's just a practical, warm receptiveness. And I think that's what allowed her and Barack to get together and remain together. But I think as much as possible, because we don't communicate very much, I think in spite of these blow-ups, if I may say so, that we should try and keep the channels of communication open, because that's the only thing I believe that will really bring about the healing. And black women are not accustomed. I had a run-in with one last night. I don't have a lot of run-ins with them because they understand when they hear someone speaking, but certainly, you know, myself, hopefully. But the thing is that they are not used to being challenged. They're not used to their ideas being challenged. Oftentimes people just
Richard, the reason that is most of these women have watched and been raised by single mothers. They
right.
watch their mothers go through all this, and they don't know what it is to actually deal with a man and
to communicate.
So they've gotten to the point where they've seen their single mother sitting over there. I don't need anybody. I can do everything on the way my own. You know, all of those things that, you know, a lot of us that have seen those single moms have heard before, and they expect, and a lot of brothers that are raised by single mothers end up, you never question mama ever. Mama
right.
is the final end-all be-all. So they've gotten used to these weak brothers who don't know what it is to be a man that will automatically sit over there and fold at any sign of conflict because they're taught never to question a woman as they're, you know, they've missed a lot of their man training. So I agree with you 100%.
And then they'll go out and kill somebody. Those men tend to be very violent. You would think men that are raised exclusively by women, and that's for the last 40 years, I agree with you, vis-a-vis feminism, you would think that these men would be somewhat docile, but they're not. They're very violent. And so I'm appreciative of the fact that we as men have begun to attach our gonads and speak up now. That's very, very important for them to hear a balanced perspective. And so I think that's the upshot.
Okay. Anybody else got any final comments?
I was just saying kind of had a little humor there, but I wouldn't say it was too far off, Alan. I think you touched on someone. You brought up Hill and Steve Harvey. I don't think they were too busy or any other things were going on. They probably knew that she's... I have nothing to do with her.
Yeah, well, that's speculation, but I don't, you know, it's interesting. The reason I brought that up, because I was reading, you know, in preparation for this interview, of course, I did a lot of Googling of her and trying to find little tidbits, and she made some comments where I don't know if I want to say she criticized both of them, but basically she said the same thing she said on the show. She basically tried, if she had at least one criticism of both of their books, she said their books were based totally on their own opinion. They didn't have any statistical research involved in her book. I guess she said she spent over $35,000 worth of research to do her book, which, you know, I congratulate her for doing it. Now, I'm not going to comment on her book. I haven't read her book. I never like to evaluate somebody's book if I haven't read it. But by the same token, don't either directly or indirectly express an evaluation of my book when you haven't read it. And I felt like, and maybe, you know, she says she claims I overreacted, but, you know, I felt like she attacked my book. She hasn't read my book. And to suggest that it was representative, my message is representative of immaturity and foolishness, I mean.
All right, we got it.
I'm sorry, 6ix9ine, man. But, dude, that was not a. Who was that saying? Somebody just said a few minutes ago. This is essentially my house.
Yeah.
You know, my radio show is, you could say, it's my house. You don't come into somebody's house and say, yeah, you know, your couch is fucked up.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is, you know, even people that come on my show, when I used to have it, and my show was just a scotch more controversial than yours and harsh. even people that came on, I was nice to my celebrity guests, my special guests and everything, but there was always a certain measure of, you do realize who this is, my show. And when people stepped out of line, I would tear them a new asshole. And I actually applaud you, brother, because you're a better man than me. Because having been my show and the way she came on the show, talking about you talk too much, and then she immediately dug into the philosophy behind Mode One and calling it foolish and ignorant and all that kind of stuff. My hat's off to you, because you held your own. You maintained your composure, and you're a better man than me, because Wendy Williams wouldn't have had shit on me if she had said that mess on my show. But
I did let her know my thoughts, as you heard when she said. Now, as far as the talk too much, I let that go because I considered that lighthearted. And honestly, I have heard that comment before from some listeners.
Well, you
I
know,
think, matter of fact, now I want to call you up, but I think even you once said, man, damn, dude. Why you got like the 25-minute intro, man? But so I let that go. I didn't trip on her on that part of it. But on the part about the upfront and straightforward, again, at first I thought that was actually going to end up being kind of, the way she said it during the intermission break, I thought it was going to be more of a lighthearted type thing. But when she went on and said what she said, yeah, that's when I knew this interview wasn't going to be what I thought it was going to be, because I was like, okay, she basically is just dogging out my book.
I was nice the whole show, but now that we're just streaming, I'm going to be real. I'm looking at her pictures on her Facebook page. And
no,
everything.
Don't go there. Please, dude. Don't do that. I got to ask you, please, bro. Don't do that. Don't do that. I don't want to stoop to that.
We're all in on her, but I swear, all of this will be evened out. She just needs some good dick. You know,
that's what I was thinking.
She's sitting over there mad and sick, and she ain't got no man to sit over there and hug up on and everything because she keeps driving away because she had all those degrees get in the way, and her perception of self gets in the way. But I'd give her some because, you know, she ain't bad looking and everything. You know,
okay, here we go. Now I got to say my disclaimer. The thoughts and opinions expressed by Jason 16 do not represent Alan Roger Curry, Goldwyn Multimedia.
Yeah, and she is parked on the corner of Bitter Bitch Boulevard and Lonely Heifer Lane with that funky-ass attitude that she got.
6'9", just had to go
there. Listen, Richard, I was going to ask you, gentlemen, do you think Sophia's a display of attitude tonight is one of the reasons that you have that 71% singleness rate among black women?
Well,
yeah.
Since this is upfront and straightforward, of course, my own show.
There you
go. I
want
to bring that up. Matter of fact, right before, it's funny you asked me that question, right before she actually decided to leave the interview, that's actually where I was going to go. I was getting ready to ask, I was going to say, don't you think that this interview is kind of a microcosm of what's wrong between black men and black women? Cause
I think
honestly,
it's a macrocosm.
If I was, a white person or Asian person, and say I just happened to tune into this interview and this discussion, if I would have heard this discussion, I would have been like, damn, no wonder black men and black women don't get along.
Exactly.
Exactly. Let me get exactly in that joke. She just proved it. But the thing is, I just keep going back to this, is that her whole thing is like she's right about everything, and you know, everybody's basically wrong. And but by her leaving the show, that to me just killed her credibility, because I mean if you're so strongly on these different things you believe, why even do that type of thing? So, again, it's just the type of thing. I don't want to hear what other people have to say. I don't hear what you guys say, Alan. I don't hear what Jason, I don't hear other people, because it's contrary to what I believe and what I put in my book. And I did, you know, hours of research, and it's got to be right. I don't even remember. Did she even talk about anybody else's book? Did that support anything she said that's in her book, supposedly?
Well, Well, it's interesting. I mentioned one of my female friends wrote me earlier. So people listening to this portion of the show, again, will probably think, well, you know, these guys are ganging up on poor little Sophia. But since we've been talking, I've received about 4 or 5 Facebook messages from female listeners. And just like my first female friend who I quoted about 20 minutes ago, yeah, a lot of my female friends are expressing who were listening tonight. They said they were very disappointed in Miss Nelson's demeanor on my show. Their biggest criticism, among other comments, was to do with her, the way she left the show. They thought that was, one woman said she thought it was just very unprofessional. Well, quite a few of them said they thought that was unprofessional. A couple of them said they thought it was tacky. And as you just said, EVP, about, I think you said, about affecting credibility, a couple of my female friends said that it diminished her credibility as a book author to get so, you know, angry and fired up. Because, again, it would have been one thing if Jason called in and said, hey, you know what, I think you're a bitch. Now then she would have a right to say, okay, Alan, what kind of show you running here? Even though technically, even my show being upfront and straightforward, I would to a certain extent maybe allow that depending on what the guest said.
Right.
But I normally don't allow any listeners to call my guests out of their name. But yeah, it'd be different if Jason came on and said, hey, you know, I think you're just a straight up bitch. But he expressed some things that were very, he was very calm demeanor. He said things
can't help
pretty
it that
eloquently.
I have heavy voice.
Let me just throw this out, gentlemen. You know, as I look over society, just scan society, women are tremendously subsidized, and they misrepresent that. I see this woman is an attorney, but they think that they have a greater grasp of reality than they really do. And they're actually,
Jason, didn't you say that?
Yeah,
thank you.
Jason actually said that in his comments when he was talking to her.
Right. They actually stand on the foundation of men, and it's unfortunate we have not shared with them what really supports them. For example, I mentioned this a moment ago. Women don't have to register for the draft. They get all the benefits of being a citizen, but they don't have to register for the selective service as a condition of employment. And that creates an unfair advantage for men. And I think I mentioned reproduction, too. And see, these are major areas, Alan, that we don't bring up to women. And they get this heady, haughty attitude that they are in some ways better than us. For the most part, they are not better than we are. They aren't even equal. Now, I believe men and women are equal. But I believe there's a tremendous amount of subsidizing of women that women are ignorant of. And unfortunately, a lot of men are ignorant of, too.
Wait a minute. I'm actually going to challenge your statement because I believe that we're equal, but it's two entirely separate parts. Because
let me explain what I mean when
okay,
I say
go
equal.
Ahead. Go ahead.
Thank you. When I say equal, I mean legally and socially. Women have...
Okay.
They have equal rights as a citizen, and that is the bulk of the reality wherein we live.
Yeah. Well, I had one thing that I wanted to say, and you know, it may not be as deep as what Richard just said, but I'd like to get this out if you don't mind.
Go ahead.
For all of the men out here who have bought into the entire argument that women always win arguments. Today on Alan Roger Curry's show, we disproved that myth because women can't deal with a man that can argue and debate just as well, if not better than they are, without a pocket full of degrees. So score one for the men. All right.
Thank you.
Pat
on the back.
I agree. Roger. Tonight was your groundbreaking show. You need to replay this all over the place because this has got to send a message. It's like we've all said this tonight. We've all agree on this, that most women like her are not used to talking to men like us. And even
exactly.
When you see her on TV, when you see her on Washington Week and all these other shows, men don't challenge her. She's not used to dealing with black men like you. So do you think she's going to actually do a book tour with black men like you? I mean, how many men is she going to meet like you? Not very many, if any at all. So this is a groundbreaking night for the Alan Roger Curry Show because you were able to take a stand, and you took a stand so hard that you made a woman just hang up and leave the show.
Broke her down like a shotgun.
She needs to see this show.
I have to add this.
You did
your job because I've always known this. If you can actually say something and she has to shut up, you did a dang good job. Because real talk, and I'm going to be honest about this, when you talk about the equality with these women, man, we're not talking about equality. We're definitely talking about advantage. That's what they want. They only want advantage. They do not want equality. I wish that they would actually walk on equality, but that's not what they're really talking about. And when they get really challenged, like you said here, they really get challenged. This is one of the reasons why a lot of them are single, because if they do really get challenged like that, then they don't know what to do. They don't know what to handle. I call you, was it 690 did that? I would call you a scary black man. You're a scary black man. Because the women run to the left, they run to the right. They're like, wait a minute, where are the good men? There's one right there. Oh, no, he scares me. Oh, it's because you're telling them the truth. That's what's
right. And what I also do is I challenge fathers. Fathers have a lot to play in this wrong-headedness and puffed-upness of women because they teach their daughters to be selfish takers. And when they talk about what a guy should do for them, They don't turn around and say what the guy, what the woman should do for the men. And
because they don't know.
So it's just a one-way street. But I challenged a lot of fathers on that, and I've had a lot of positive response. These women are, they're given an advantage. They don't want to be just equal, but we need to point this out to them,
well,
just like
here,
as we're doing tonight
is,
this,
yeah,
to this woman.
Is,
a lot of black females really think they are above the men, and that is just pure bullshit.
Richard, you know, the thing is, and I know Alan is probably going to, you know, sit over here and his mouth's going to drop open to hear me say this. But in America in 2011, in black America in 2011, we actually live in a matriarchal society, meaning run by women. And
it's called a gynocracy.
Gynocracy, that's a new one. I like that.
In the world ended up, so that's probably why.
You know,
we've been unfortunately invaginated. The point is, we should get all we have to do, you know, to dispel darkness and this crap. I usually say bovine scatology, but the thing of it is, to dispel this, all we have to do is just speak out. Just like those women in Atlanta saying they couldn't find any black men on their educational and financial level, but nobody thought to ask them, just say, well, how many men have you approached? Everything else, they're proactive. I say they go a-whoring after everything man creates, jobs, cars, houses, careers, educations, but they don't pursue men. They don't show themselves desirous of men. They play this damnable game of hide-and-seek, and that's non-adult.
You know,
so we need to start.
Hey, wait, real quick, I got to ask EVP. So, EVP, you still there?
Yeah, man.
Since you caught a lot of things, and I always know you're very perceptive. Now, did you catch where, if I'm not mistaken, she said she didn't like generalizations, but was I wrong in perceiving her as making a generalization? She said something about fathers, brothers never stay in the home, and they leave the black women to raise the children by themselves. Was that or was that not a generalization?
Oh, I agree 1,000%, man. When you were talking about generalizing, man, I was like cheering like in the stands at a football game or something. Because I mean, that was just totally generalization.
I found that very interesting because again, if I'm not mistaken, I would have to hear the tape, but I want to say she made a generalization almost right after she had criticized the idea of making generalizations. And I just found that very, very interesting and entertaining. And
you got to read between the lines, though, Roger. What she was really saying is she doesn't like when you or men make generalizations.
That's
correct.
They
can make generalizations all they want.
That's right. It's about power and control.
It's about her. Remember, she's better than you. So it's
that's
about
right.
She doesn't like generalizations when you say it, not when she
Thank
says
you.
It.
Oh, I would agree with that. You know, I want to point out, too, is, you know, she's without class, and she was being a professional. She was trying to be sarcastic and ask you how much time is the show had been running and trying to be cute. And in other words, you know, I need to get off this show. You know, you're keeping me on here too long and all that kind of thing. That was just the most tackiest, without class, unprofessional thing. I mean, I've listened just to keep it in context of up front, your show, I've heard scores of shows, of course, and no one, you know, black, white, you know, woman, man, no one's ever done that type of thing. I just think that, you know, again, it's, you know, she disqualified herself greatly by how she handled herself. Just, you know, someone might maybe listen and say they're ganging up on it, but she brought this on herself. You know, instead of standing and going toe-to-toe and standing with conviction on what she believes and what she's done, all this research so far, well, then go toe-to-toe with you or, you know, Jason comes on or whoever comes on, you know, go toe-to-toe with them. I mean, I would have respect for her for doing that. She stay on the show, defend what she believes, state her statistics or whatever she's so called, you know, all this research she's done, and, you know, make her points, listen to other people's, you know, openly, you know, respectfully disagree, You know, I say go toe to toe with them. You know, well, explain what, explain why. You know, which I've heard right here on the show, but different, you know, topics many times, different guests. You know, I didn't agree with everything they had to say, but you know, I great deal of respect for a lot of them because at least they, if some of a caller called in, if it was me or Jason or you asking a question, whoever it might be in the world, you know, they listened and they came back and responded with their answer.
I'm gonna do this, but to me, it's like I'm gonna offer a little bit in her defense. To have been on CNN and, you know, these broadcasts that she's been on and involved where, you know, she's been, she hasn't been challenged in her life. And when people are not challenged, truly challenged, you know, with their ideas, principles, and people aren't just blowing smoke up their behinds as far as how great they are and, oh, you're going to be the lawyer in the family, as she alluded to, and how everybody told her she was, you know, destined for greatness. To come on to a show where it's not a bunch of ignorant rabble or it's not a bunch of people that are just like yes men and everything, being in the Hollywood machine, I know how it is, you know, she just got confronted with something that she isn't prepared, capable of dealing with at this point in her career, literary career or anything like that. And I think that, you know, if I would give her some advice, I would say, you need to go back. You need to really read your own book and figure out what your message is and be able to stick to it and be able to defend it no matter what happens. Because I told Alan this. I took it easy on her. Alan knows me.
Well, you know, the media will take the quote out of Alan's book. Yeah, Alan wasn't going to let someone trample on what his principles and his things he espouses and his points he makes in his book, like she was trying to do. So you could learn a lesson by that, you know. You know.
But you know what was funny? Wouldn't you say throughout the whole conversation, she was expressing her opinions, criticisms, thoughts, whatever, in a upfront, straightforward manner. She wasn't mincing words on whatever her opinions were. So I found it contradictory and hypocritical.
Bingo.
For her
yep.
to say that within the context of dating and relationships, you shouldn't be upfront and straightforward, but yet when it comes to your expressing your opinions in any other facet of life, then it's okay.
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
I meant to bring that point up, and you caught it for her because I forgot all about that. That's right, because she, if she was being like that, that's hypocritical. This
yeah,
is like
she
what
put herself out there.
If she's criticizing black men, usually the media will not challenge her. And I also want to make this point, is that women, vis-a-vis Roe versus Wade, it is the women that are creating the fatherless homes. We should
Thank
throw
you.
That right back at them because it's my choice, my body. But they reject their responsibility.
Oh, Alan, you know that's my topic right there.
Yeah, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do. I only got a couple minutes left before I'm in the show, so I got, what, I see five open lines. So I'm going to give each of you maybe 15, 30 seconds to just give a final comment, final thought, either about this interview, about this discussion, about the state of black male-female relationships in general. So I'm going to start with... Well, Jason, I'll start with you.
All right.
15, 30 seconds, final thoughts.
Sophia, she came on and, you know, she had her hackles up, ready to rumble, you know, and she voiced her opinion. And to me, I basically challenged her on a few points on everything that she had said, and I'm extremely disappointed in the sister. If you... Sister's main strength is their verbal ability, and men normally have to hold back our physical ability and everything. So she's been challenged this evening with some men that, you know, our minds are sound and we don't capitulate to women that just because. And I wish her the best with her book. I won't be buying it, and I don't recommend anyone else buying it based on what I heard from her tonight. And I would... welcome a conversation with her because I'm not angry. I love sisters. You know, it's just I can't stand ignorant heifers parked on the corner of Bitter Bitch Boulevard and Lonely Heifer Lane. And that's all I'd like to say.
Thank you, Jason, for contributing heavily to this show. And, I thought your call, again, was it was some great comments made by you. EVP3, what's your final thoughts?
My final thoughts is when she set the conversation back, I think, and the way she can't handle herself as a black woman, and I echo what Jason said. I have no intention of reading a book, and I'm not going to recommend anybody read. I've heard about all I need to hear from her. I think she's basically by her actions showed, which was basically said among our conversation here. I think that. Why there's a problem between in the black male female relationship. I mean, why there's a communication breakdown, where there's issues. A lot of not to be stereotypical or generalizing myself, but there's this issue because a lot of it stems from this. Certainly with the women educated, more educated black women. These days, because it's in a lot of ways show why there's problems. We don't want to hear they have a picture of the black male. I mean, they just have a picture of the black male and what the relationship has been like, and they're stuck in that mindset. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, EVP man, for. Staying for the whole show and contributing your thoughts and comments. Much love to you, bro.
Absolutely.
Neil, I'm running out of time, but in a few seconds, what's your final thoughts on tonight?
Well, just seeing her on TV and so forth, I didn't think it would turn out like this. But I'm glad you stood your ground. I think you did a lot for black men tonight. I wish more black men could have listened to the show and got a chance to witness this. But, I think you represented us well tonight. That's all I can say.
I appreciate that. And this will become an archive podcast, so a lot of people will be able to listen to it. And I'm definitely, I encourage a lot of people I know to listen to it. But thank you, Neil, for all your thoughts tonight and for you sticking around for so long. I forgot. Who was 978 again?
It's Solon Black, Alan.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. What's up? Now, tell me your final thoughts in a few seconds.
Okay, my final thoughts are this. Sisters, you guys are going to have to take down that so-called shield of education and stop using it as a sword as well against black men, thinking that that's giving you a leg up. You need to get down to the heart level. If you can't communicate at the heart level and intelligently, you can forget about your degrees and all that stuff, because we don't need that. We need your heart.
Appreciate you, brother. Thank you for sticking around so long. And finally, Richard, what's your final thoughts?
Oh, yeah, thanks, Alan. Well, look here, I think it's great when we have these conversations, and I'm going to listen to the tape tomorrow, the archive of it, and I'm so appreciative when black men can actually and do answer so-called educated black women the way you gentlemen did tonight. So I'm going to listen to the archive tape tomorrow with a great deal of appreciation. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for contributing your thoughts. Well, listeners, I'll just say in closing, for those still in the chat room, and I'm amazed I still got like 20 people in the chat room, thank you for sticking around. I think you can tell by listening to most of this show, if not all of this show, that most of them, probably 90% of my shows go as kind of anticipated or as I kind of predict them in my head. I kind of know. Usually I have a feel for the type of guests I'm dealing with even before we start the interview. But there's probably been over the last 3.5 to 4 years at least a handful of guests where the conversation didn't necessarily go the way I thought it would go. And in a lot of instances, it became much more contentious than I would have originally anticipated, much more negative and antagonistic. And honestly, this was one of those episodes, but I got to be real. I actually probably enjoyed the portion that I just concluded with a lot of my male friends on the phone. We kind of had a brother rap session and a relationship chat session, and I enjoyed that very much. And, you know, just us sharing our thoughts probably more than I did with the actual interview with my guest. But here's the thing, and I hope some future guests of mine might be listening, but if there's at least one rule I have on my show, you ain't going to ever come on my show and disrespect my book. If you're going to disrespect my book, then, you might as well not even come on my show. You might as well. Because, matter of fact, the last time I dealt with an interview like this was I had a guy, I'm not going to say his name, but I had a guest a couple years ago. He did something similar. He came on my show and basically criticized my Mole One philosophy, and I'm not down with that at all. So that's my final thought. I hope everybody has an enjoyable and safe weekend. Take care, and I'll be back next week with David X for the fifth time. See you then. Thank you.